The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 22nd of April, 2020. On the podcast today, Stuart Gall, Chief Executive Officer of Intelligent Ultrasound, MED, or M-E-D is the ticker there, and Stuart discusses the business model, progress so far, and upcoming milestones. By the way, Intelligent Ultrasound develops artificial intelligence-based clinical image analysis software tools for the diagnostic medical ultrasound market and high-fidelity virtual reality simulators for the ultrasound training market. So very hot area there. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the oil price crash and also mentions the following companies: SolGold, Rio Tinto, and Antofagasta. Plus, as always, on the podcast, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. In fact, it's top 10 versions of these lists, where you'll also see a COVID-19 index. And as you check this out, these are companies, I don't know, about 20-odd companies there. These are companies that could benefit from the pandemic in some way. Maybe they're fighting against the virus in some way, in medicine. Or basically, the lockdown benefits their business model. So check that out there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Stuart Gall, Chief Executive Officer of Intelligent Ultrasounds. MED's ticker there, Stuart. Thanks for joining me.
Welcome. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I've had you sort of on my watch list for a while. I do like med tech. I like tech. I like med tech as well. So it's a good combo. So you've had some bits of news out recently. You've done a fundraise. And you've also been involved in, the very famous now, Nightingale Hospital. And you've also been involved in New York out there with COVID-19 case studies. And we'll dig into that. Before we do, Stu, for people not familiar with Intelligent Ultrasound, could you just give us a brief summary as to what it's all about, please?
Yeah. So, we're a business that operates specifically in the sector of ultrasound, medical ultrasound. We started out of Cardiff University, and we were all about teaching doctors how to scan using the very latest technology in terms of virtual reality and haptic touch and feel technology. And 2 years ago, we then expanded from teaching doctors in the classroom to following them into the clinic and providing them with AI-based software that helps them in real time scan faster and scan better.
Yeah, that's a very hot area, isn't it, AI? And you can see, I mean, lots of studies have come out saying how it helps in that field so much. First and foremost, so you train, so what, your biggest client is what? Sort of NHS, or who's that?
Yeah, so we actually sell all around the world. We sell into basically simulation centres, medical schools, teaching hospitals and hospital departments. We started in the UK and broadly started in the area of obstetrics, teaching doctors how to scan babies. And we then moved into America. We put a direct sales team into America, operate out of Atlanta in there, Georgia, and then we sell through about 30 resellers around the world. So broadly, we sell in we've sold into about 500 institutions around the world, and we don't really have one specific customer. So we sell to private hospitals, we sell to big national medical systems.
Yeah, and is there? I assume that's quite a large market, is it? Are you seeing decent growth there?
So we've done okay. The business last year turned over just under 6 million. It's been growing year on year. I think the training market is a potentially very large market globally. Obviously, it's always like any market, susceptible to the ups and downs. And certainly in the training market in the UK last year wasn't quite as good, but America was up 50%. So broadly, we've been growing as a business. We looked 2 years ago to expand the business so that we took ourselves not just from teaching those doctors, but also expand into the much larger market that is operational clinical ultrasound. So doctors that are then, once they've been taught, are then actually scanning real patients in the clinic and providing them with software tools that would help them scan faster and better. So that's where we see the real future large scale growth of the business is in the clinical software side, where we'll provide that software to the big ultrasound manufacturers.
Yeah, and how is that going at the moment then?
So yeah, it's great. I mean, as I say, we 2 years ago, we bought a company that was a spin out of Oxford University that is based on the research of a lady called Professor Alison Noble. She's one of the world's leading experts in real-time image analysis using AI, specifically in ultrasound. And they had basically an excellent concept and models, and we've been able to take that and commercialize that and turn it into something that manufacturers have been interested in actually embedding in their machine. And last year, we signed our first contract with one of the biggest manufacturers in the world. Their name, can't disclose their name at the moment, and we also can't disclose what the terms are, but basically it's taking our first AI product and it'll be embedded into their ultrasound machines within a specific speciality, and that will enable a doctor to switch that software on, which will then help them while they scan in real time by giving them immediate feedback about whether their image that they want to save has met the protocols that are relevant to the scan that they're doing.
I see. And how do you generate revenue from that?
So there's a royalty-based revenue. So when the customer selects that as an option when they're buying the ultrasound machine, we then get paid a royalty.
I see. And talk about recent news out today, Bodyworks, COVID-19 ultrasound simulator case study. What's all that about then, Stuart?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously everyone's very aware of COVID-19, and initially when COVID was coming out and, you see signs of infection in the lung, the normal thing would be you'd have a CT scan or an X-ray, but ultrasound has proved itself to be extremely useful in the front line in both finding out what stage of the disease progression you're at. And that's mainly because ultrasound's all about point of care. It's about scanning at the bedside. It's smaller, it's cheaper. It's not a big X-ray machine or CT machine. You don't have the issue of having to transport an infected patient through a ward to get to an imaging center. You can do it at the bedside. And so China and Italy, America, the UK found that ultrasound was an extremely useful tool in diagnosing COVID. And as we teach ultrasound, we very quickly, the team worked flat out to rush out a COVID-19 lung ultrasound teaching module that doctors in the front line could use to learn the skill of how to identify the key progression of the disease using ultrasound. And so when they built the Nightingale Hospital, we were one of the simulators that was used to teach all the doctors there how to identify these key elements within the image. And in fact, one of our lead salesperson for the rest of the world was the person that led that training using the Bodyworks Eve simulator, and he actually contracted COVID from doing all the teaching. He's recovered now, thankfully. We made sure that the software was available for free to any hospital that had our simulator, and also any then hospital that wants to buy one of the simulators, the product is also free on that. And we found immediately the take up was that all the hospitals that had our simulators were asking for the free bit of software. And New York was one of those, Dr. Kaufman, and in the NYU Langone Health System, and he's been using that to teach people that basically wouldn't normally be on the front line, but having to convert to helping in the ICU ward and to help in the front line where they're triaging patients. And that's looking at people that normally would be doing surgery or anesthesiology or pediatrics, acute care nurse practitioners, and they're now helping as bedside ICU providers. And they've been training literally hundreds of these using our simulator. And that's what the story is about this morning.
Yeah, wow. And of course, it'll help of course, patients and doctors alike, but surely that's hugely beneficial to you as well, isn't it?
Well, I think, I mean, firstly, to be honest, it has helped meant that we felt like we've actually done something to help. So I think the company's felt is quite proud. You know, to be honest, our workforce, all the staff have been magnificent in what they've done and buckling down to make things happen and deliver a product from scratch, you know, under a week to the marketplace. And I think that's been really appreciated. It's been, you know, we certainly are proud of what we've done. So that's helped. And I think clearly, obviously, in the longer term, we hope that the simulator themselves will be, it'll be a very relevant product for hospitals to purchase in the longer term. So you know, we are hopeful that that will help in what is a very difficult time. Everyone's aware of the impact that COVID's having on companies and their sales, and it's all about trying to minimize that impact and make sure that you've got a range of product that you can keep selling. So, you know, clearly, although our numbers, our analysts in the market, our broker in the market, Cenkos, our numbers are under review, so we don't have any official forecasts in the marketplace because we just can't tell at the moment what the impact is and going to be on us in quarter two. Clearly, we're hoping that products like these will help us, you know, get through out the other side. And I think that's the key for, you know, the majority of companies is making sure you're positioned to, you know, survive through this. And that's exactly, you know, what we're trying to do at the moment. So we've, you know, been very conscious that we, you know, manage our costs as tightly as possible. We clearly focus on making sure we can make as many sales as possible whilst managing those costs. But also, we recently completed a funding round that gives us raised 5 million from our existing shareholders, and that clearly helps not just with, you know, the on-term, long-term development, because we are a product company that's about building new products for the future. We're at a cutting edge of AI software development for real-time imaging analysis and ultrasound. And so we have, you know, it's key to keep that development going. You don't want this to stop all that, but you've got to balance it. And so the 5 million will help continue developing not just the products we've got, but new products in the marketplace that we hope will come through over the next 12, 24 months. And then clearly we'll strengthen our balance sheet. So the you know, the important bit is make sure you've got enough money, in our case, to get through the other side of COVID, but also to clearly get us to a position of being a profitable business and one that could grow and have, you know, successful revenues from this new and exciting area of AI software in imaging.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, sounds very good. And so, looking forward to, say, you know, say next 12 months maybe, or next, what's the next sort of big milestone or target you're hoping to achieve then, Stuart?
So I think, you know, clearly as a business for us, it's all about bringing our first AI products to marketplace. We've got a number of products. We've got two main product platforms. One's called ScanNav. It's all about delivering obstetrics-based real-time real-time image analysis software tools to obstetricians. And then we've also got a product called Anatomy Guide. And Anatomy Guide is very similar, but it does real-time image analysis and anatomy highlighting for doctors whilst they're doing needling. So it basically highlights the structures on the ultrasound scan in real time while they're looking to place a needle within the patient. And those two products, it's all about bringing those products to marketplace. So obviously our focus is on making sure that we can progress those products through regulatory approval and then launch them into the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So if someone's listening right now, Stuart, likes the sound of the progress you're making there but are not yet following the story, please give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, well, I think AI is dramatically changing medical imaging over the next decade. And we, a British company, Cardiff-based company, is right at the forefront of that change in ultrasound imaging. We have got multiple set of products that are coming to marketplace, you know, with the first product having signed the deal. So we're bringing a great range of products to marketplace. And finally, we're well funded. So we're in a position to actually deliver on those promises.
Wonderful stuff. Stu, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm good, thank you.
Now, the market's all over the place a little bit. It's rallied, quite strongly last couple of weeks, and it's come back a little bit now. And it's been spooked as well, isn't it, by the oil price. And what the heck? I've never seen this before. I mean, oil is down. Even Brent now is taking a bit of a hammering today. You know, mainly the futures contracts, of course. We saw the WTI May go down to minus $37. I don't know how that's even possible. But what's your thoughts, John? What's happening here?
Well, look, OPEC were too slow to cut production. The lockdown in the West, in Europe, in the US, and pretty much everywhere else now, has caused a complete collapse in demand and usage of gasoline, diesel, and heavy fuel oil. So there are not so many ships running around either, and so OPEC carried on producing as if not much had changed, and the world has run out of storage space, and this is what's caused the problem. Normally, there are physical traders buying oil and then taking physical delivery of that, particularly for the West Texas contract in the US. And although that's a relatively small part of the market, it is there to mop up anyone who forgets to roll over their contracts. So we've seen this crazy situation now where the West Texas index has gone into negative levels because nobody can take that oil. They can't take any physical delivery, and the price dropped to a level where the ETF funds that are based on those contracts would suddenly be loss making if they realize huge losses and wipe out their investors entirely if they try and roll over the contract. So there's possibly going to be something like $1 trillion worth of losses on those ETF contracts, mainly sold in South Korea and other Asian countries.
Yeah, hasn't one company gone through already?
Yes, is Hinling. I'm sure I'm not pronouncing that correctly. Hin Leong. Well, they're an Asian, a Singaporean-based trader. They've gone under. Presumably something to do with the oil price collapsing. But to be honest, they'd run up $800 million worth of losses over the last few years anyway. So as Warren Buffett would always say, when the tide goes out, you've got to make sure you've got your shorts on.
Yeah, we see you've got them down. But the thing is that just a one-off? Because I mean, at the moment, there's got to be a lot of stress being created by this oil price at the moment. Like I said, look at June now. Brent oil is below $20. It's $18. It was down at 16.5 earlier on. WTI, what is that? That's 11 and change. You know, this was a June contract. There's going to be a lot of, you know, oil companies worrying here, surely. I mean, how can you solve this? Like I said, you've got, I think I've read about 30 million plus of oversupply barrels per day. That's what's happening. Storage is full. The demand's not coming on quickly. It won't be coming on for months. You know, it'll be a slow build-up. What's going to happen? It's not going to get any better, surely. What's going on here? I mean, there's going to be a lot of people suffering here, isn't there?
Yes. I mean, well, oil companies are going to have two issues, potentially. Firstly, they can't. They're going to get a rubbish price for their oil, and second, maybe they can't actually physically sell the oil now. And we see this in the diamond market, where diamond mines have been forced to close because they can't physically sell the diamonds at the moment. The buyers who normally fly around the world are not flying, and in fact, the guys that cut the diamonds are not cutting, and there are all sorts of problems. So the whole supply chain is disrupted, and so it's much worse than just getting a poor price for the commodity. It's, you can't sell it at all.
Yeah, and surely that you get. I've heard some stories about. Of course, every producer has a different level at which they're profitable. They break even at. But I've heard that you know, in America, the shale producers, some of those are highly leveraged. I don't know why that is. Is that, do you know if that's the case or what?
I believe many of them are, and they were bailed out last time the oil price fell. They're going to have to shut down production in almost entirely, I would have thought, because it's going to be so uneconomic to produce for them. The best thing is for these companies to go into some form of suspension.
Yeah. Trouble is, like you said, at the moment, we've got this supply, you know, oversupply, and the shock, demand shock, just a stop in demand. And of course, during the coronavirus, this is a perfect storm. And so what's going to, I mean, I don't understand, because normally if, you know, OPEC decide to cut and then the shale producers decide to, you know, slow down, whatever, then essentially it doesn't take long for the market to rebalance. But right now, because half the world is in lockdown, and we're already storage capacity, it's going to take a long time to unwind, isn't it? This is going to be a massive oversupply lag.
It certainly will take some time to unwind, and probably OPEC will have to step in with a bigger production cut, because they're, what they need to do is the world needs to start using what's in storage before prices can really recover. And yes, there's no point producing it if nobody's going to consume it, and there won't even be anywhere to store it, because the storage costs are going through the roof. Anyone who owns an old oil tanker right now is certainly having a good time, because oil tankers are used for storage.
The thing is, I think, you know, again, it provides opportunity. You know, some of these oil companies have been hammered down. I mean, we haven't seen the previous lows yet, I mean, of the market. What I found amazing the other day, I did a video on the weekend about the S&P 500. And I know, of course, it's mainly now the big five stocks are rallying, like Amazon and all these people are doing very well at the moment. So it's pushing the price up a bit. But they're only 15% down from an all-time high recently after this rally we just had. And I thought, how can that be the case? We've got what people are saying it's going to be the worst recession, maybe even depression, for a century. We got no E in the PE rating for Q2, and yet we're only 15% off all-time highs in the S&P. There's a disjoint between the real economy here, isn't it, and the markets. And I thought, I mean, the UK market hasn't rallied as strongly, I know, but the S&P, I can't fathom that, you know?
Well, and there's more bad news coming, because we know from talking to people in the US that the credit rating agencies are cutting everybody's credit rating. So it's going to make it harder for consumers to borrow money. And the Americans love to spend, but they often have to borrow before they spend. Mm-hmm. Then we've also got a collapse in used car values. America's biggest secondhand car dealer, they report a collapse of 15% in values so far this month. And that indicates that when people come up to the end of their lease terms on their vehicles, they'll be handing those cars back, and therefore there's going to be a glut of used cars being sold off at cheaper and cheaper prices, and that's going to cause at least a $3 billion hit to the leasing arms of General Motors and Ford. So this is the news is getting worse, and there's more of it to come. And yes, there are winners in this, like Amazon and whatever, but even Amazon's going to get to a stage where there are supply chain issues. We see one of the labor unions in France has caused Amazon to close a warehouse. I think it might be its major warehouse and distribution center, because they're unhappy about unsafe working practices. I think that relates to COVID-19, of course. Yeah. So it's not pretty for anyone out there.
No, exactly. Well, do you know what? I on that video on the weekend, I looked at the unemployment rate, the initial jobless claims in America, which is now 22 million in the last 4 weeks. And I said, even if 80% of these go back to work, which is a very optimistic figure, it's still the same as the worst last five recessions unemployment rates. So if 80% go back to work from this figure, and yet there's more initial jobless claims this week, and they're reckoning there'll be another 5 million forecast. So I just think, at the moment, the market isn't pricing this in. It can't. Every company can't give guidance. So how can it price something in it doesn't know anything about? So it's very odd, but here we are. I mean, at the moment, are you in the market, Johnny? Are you sitting on cash, on tumps of cash, or? So at the moment, I'm just genuinely. I don't want to put money in. I just think we've got to have another bottom. We're not pricing this in, I don't think. You
know. Well, I was going to buy some stocks last week, and in fact, I bought a couple of oil stocks just ahead of the OPEC meeting. But oil clearly carried on going south. And I was going to buy some more stocks, but I had a technical issue that prevented me from buying those. So probably that saved me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was looking at buying some miners and some house builders. But I see these things are seesawing around. It looks like everything's bouncing along the bottom. I was looking at Solgold. The share price has actually held up incredibly well, but that's something to do with the 22 million ounces of gold that they have in their Alpala project in Ecuador. Mm-hmm. So that's not looking so bad.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that there is positive news out there. If you look at Blue Jay, which is another one of our clients, they did report that they've got that there's an offtake discussion or agreement for 200,000 tons of material. And you know, that goes some way to offset the disappointment of Rio Tinto saying they're not going to process the bulk sample until next year, which is so typical of Rio Tinto to go so overly cautious. Mm-hmm. Because although we are facing a big recession, I also think there's going to be a lot of commodity demand when nations spend money on infrastructure to drag us out of all this. And you know, one of the good things, I suppose, is the UK has spent so little on infrastructure over the last 30 years, from my recollection, that actually we've got rather a lot that we can spend money on. And if you look at the state of roads and bridges in the United States, they've definitely got a lot that they can spend money on as well. And I wonder about China, because China's done a lot of infrastructure spending over the last 20 years, and you wonder how much more there is that they can possibly do.
Yeah. I mean, they just have knocked down those, you know, any bridge now beyond a year, 2 years old, to knock it down, start again, it's too old. Maybe that's the way forward. But, yeah, and you mentioned before we came on, Antofagasta had some results out, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, typical Antofagasta, always very, very solid and very steady. So they just say that they expect their copper production to be at the lower end of published guidance. They're always measured and relatively cautious in what they say. They're a great quality company. And although there is a little bit of strife in Chile at the moment, you know, these mines, they're isolated enough to manage pandemic-type situations. And maybe they might suffer some supply chain issues at some point. But I think they're relatively well set. So, I mean, it's a great quality and dependable company. The only problem is that the risk-off attitude with traders at the moment is causing the copper price to pull back. So given that Antofagasta is a copper company, it's probably likely to come back for a day or two. But then remember, it's going to be one of the world's better dividend payers, because although it will be hit by lower copper prices and maybe some disruption, it's always been fantastic at producing dividends for investors. And I think you're going to see most other FTSE type companies slashing their dividends. Yeah. And I would have thought Antofagasta would probably maintain something.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Cool, John, good chat. Anything else on your mind or not?
I think that's enough for now. I think that there is quite a lot going on in the world today. And, you know, I am concerned that we could see a rerun of the Asian crisis that we saw some years ago. Because there are an awful lot of companies out there in Asia that are over-leveraged and probably hiding a few skeletons in their cupboards. And like Hin Leong, perhaps this is what makes them go under.
I hope not. But you know, it is worrying. I do think we, you know, considering the figures coming out, they're beating all, you know, history sort of, you know, significant levels at the moment. We've seen, you know, people saying historically this is the bad. I saw the figures the other day and I thought this was a misprint, but it wasn't. The IMF said the UK will have the biggest slowdown since 1709. And I thought, what? 1709? And I thought, what? They mean 9 minutes past five? And I thought, 24-hour clock. And I thought, no, but they were right. I thought they misspelled that, but they're predicting that. And I thought, well, okay, well, the markets aren't acting like that. So something wrong here. Something's got to give. But who knows? I don't think anyone knows at the moment. But that's what makes it interesting, I suppose. But marvellous, John. We'll speak to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Omega Diagnostics, that's ODX ticker there, down 6% to 30.7 pence. At four, Two Shields Investments, up 33.33% to 0.14. At three, Novacyt. That's down 8.5% to 317.5. At two, Tiziana, down 9% to 50 pence. That's Till's ticker there. And number one, flying today, it's up strongly. 69 pence up to 25.45%. All right, top five, most liked or read RNSs. At five, Ferron Pharma. That's results of placing an issue price. At four, Avacta. That's Sativa partnership ahead of schedule. At three, Pembridge Resources. Minto operations update for Q1 2020. At two, Cobre geophysical survey update. That's for Metal Tiger there. They never put the name on the RNS, so I have to click in there. It takes me a bit of time there. Sorry about that. And at one, New River REIT. Director Remuneration and Trussell Trust Support, right there, up 1% at 58 pence there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.